I don't know, it's different. It's very, very different. And I think that now, like, I'm kind of seeing, like, okay, maybe there is some things that I do get treated maybe a little bit different as a girl, even with crew guys. Like, I feel like sometimes it's hard to get them to believe in me. And I feel like that's been a big struggle ever since, like, now realizing going back, like, I got lucky those first couple years at Toyota that the crew chiefs that I did have believed in me.
Yep.
And, like, I didn't realize how big of a deal that was, because there was a time where, like, I feel like I didn't have necessarily the whole structure that did believe in me.
Yep.
And I feel like it affected my results a lot. So now, like, I feel like this year I'm really in a place where, like, I have people that believe in me.
Unleashed with the Dingo and Danny. Fueled by Monster Energy.
We need more excitement, though.
Less screams.
Oh, yeah.
Hey. All right,
there
we're back.
That was right.
We have Haley Deegan sitting in the chair today. Kind of crazy because I think I've known Haley her whole life.
Yeah, for a while. I feel like we've known each other for a long, long time.
And that's weird. You've blossomed into a beautiful woman that has become very, very successful. In many areas, and we're super proud of you here at Monster, and we're stoked you're in here today. So thank you for coming, Haley. Woo!
Thanks for having me. I'm excited. I'm really excited. I was looking forward to this. When Tom told me that I had opportunity to be on the podcast, I was pretty pumped.
I like that. I like that. We like you. Danny, how you doing?
I'm doing really good.
Really good?
Really, really good. Yeah.
Okay. Danny has probably some stories of your dad pre you around.
Yeah, some early winter X Games stuff.
It's probably pretty good.
Your father is a madman.
Yeah, I know. I've been told a little bit.
I'm sure everywhere you go, you probably hear stories about your dad.
So many. Everyone that, like, because the racing world's so small that people, like, the people have been around each other for so long. And they're like, oh, I remember when your dad, I'm like, oh, that's a new story.
Yeah, do you, like, fact check with your dad? You're like, hey, Dad, I heard this new story about
Oh, I'll,
you.
Like, go, like, not necessarily, like, tell my dad, but, like, I'll go to, like, the people, like, everyone around him, be like, hey, is this true? Is this true? And I'm like, ah. But, like, most of the time, people, they're not usually making it up. So usually it's a pretty even success.
They're like,
rate.
Well, that ends. That also adds to this story. You're like, okay, I'm gonna stop asking
up.
Questions now.
It was really cool because back in the day when Metal Militia was like its biggest thing, and then Grenade was, you know, at our peak, we, like, you know, were able to do collaborations and kind of bring, like, they were very similar companies at a very similar time in the action sport world, and very often you'd see a Metal Militia sticker and a Grenade sticker, and we ended up putting that together and making Metal Militia Grenade stuff, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of really badass stuff. Gloves, outerwear, so many cool pieces.
Yeah.
It was such, like, I feel like Metal Militia was such a big, like, movement of a company. Like, it was just, it was in an era to where, like, that something like that would probably not happen again.
No way.
It's, like, it was so rare and so cool, like, how literally that company was built along with the sport of freestyle motocross.
Yeah.
Like, they went hand in hand.
Yeah.
It was so cool.
It was, like, the crossover from Krusty's into Metal Militia, and then, like, the Brian Deegan, Travis Pastrana, like, head-to-head freestyle, like, in the Staples Center, that was a moment in time. Brittany, how you doing?
Fantastic. Thank you.
Always there, always smiling.
Mm-hmm.
Our new addition to the team.
Perfect.
Yeah. We took the longtime UFC Octagon, how would you put it, like, legacy? Girl, like I don't want to say
the
legend.
OG.
The original.
The original. Yeah.
So we've got two badass wounds sitting across from us today. So me and Danny may get a little shy. Let's hope not.
You won't.
I want to take it back to you as a kid. Like, it must have been crazy, like, growing up. Brian Deegan's daughter and then being the oldest and growing up around dirt. Like, Do you even remember the first time you got on a motorbike, or are they just, like, weird pictures that you look at and you're like, oh, there I am? Like,
no,
on
I
a
actually
bike.
Remember a lot of it. Like, there's a lot of memories that I have, like, even my first race, my first off-road truck. I remember I had this little pink quad. It was, like, tiny, and it was powder coated, like, baby pink with, like, my name on the front that my parents got me for Christmas. Like, I remember a lot of, like, core memories. I have a lot of them from my childhood, but, like, I don't think I realized how different it was till I got a little bit older. Like, I didn't know, and I didn't know any different. Like, yeah. It's not like I've lived multiple childhoods, so, like, that's the only thing I knew. Like, oh, like, if we go to the mall, like, Dad's gonna get stopped every couple steps, like, and he has to take a picture and do that stuff, or if we go anywhere, like, it's normal for him to get recognized at airports, and, like, it's just, I don't know, like, it was normal for me, though. Like, I was just kind of used to it.
Yeah.
You're like, Dad has a lot of friends.
Oh, yeah, Dad has a lot
Dad
of friends.
Is really popular.
Don't old dads have as many friends as this? And then that was, so you grew up in Temecula, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Temecula.
That was kind of the mecca of it.
Mm-hmm. Temecula, I love Temecula. If, like, at the end of my career, like, when I retire, like, I'm like, I feel like my heart and soul is, like, Temecula. I love it there.
That's
like,
where you want to retire to?
I think so. Like, I told my parents, I was like, hey, like, I'll, like, because they still have the Temecula house, the whole compound there. They're doing, like, a rental deal with Marriott. But I was like, dude, you guys got to keep that. Like, one day I want to buy it back. Like, and, like, I love that town. I feel like I've had so many, like, great memories there. And just, like, the whole, like, freestyle motocross world was there. And, like, it just was so cool growing up.
Do you think that's, like, a lot of people in ways to where, and then you probably grew up, it would have been a dream growing up there. And I remember going to that property with you, and you were a little bit older, but that wasn't even that long ago. It was maybe like 5 years ago, but it's like, it was a dreamland. It was this giant compound, mm-hmm. and it literally everything that you needed from outside of the world mm-hmm. was there. Motor track, dirt track for racing, a couple mm-hmm. of different motor tracks, freestyle setup, jumps, car jump setup, skate park,
yeah.
trampoline.
Uh-huh, volleyball court. Like, it was everything. Like, everything at that house. Like, I had, like, a bunch of little, like, girlfriends growing up that would come over and, like, hang out as a kid, and, like, it was always, like, oh, like, we'll go to your house, and, like, you never had a plan. You just, like, literally did stuff around the house because there were so many things to do. Like, we'd go take the Can-Am out, go drive that, go drive quads, dirt bikes, anything. And there was, like, the foam pit was, like, I remember a big hit when I was a kid. Like,
for sure.
Going off and, like, the arm that kind of hangs over that pulls the bikes out and stuff. Like, we'd climb up that, hang off of it, and, like, do flips off of it as a kid. And now looking back at it, I'm like, why would I ever do that? That thing was, the foam in it was like 15 years old. If you, like, when you hit that foam, it poofed. And I'm like, that's not good for, like, you.
Was so the toxic. Foam outside?
It was all outside. It was never covered.
So when
and
it rained.
Snakes, spiders. Yeah. And we just, like, free fell in it for years as a kid. I'm like, I'm going to get some sort. There's going to be something, like, that comes up later. It's like, oh, man, that foam. Like, there's a bunch of foam in your lungs from a childhood doing that.
But how like, lucky and special, though, because nowadays kids are like, iPad, get me on my computer, TikTok. Like, mm-hmm. you had that experience to, like, live that life of a kid in adventure. I mean, it really molded you to be who you are.
Yeah, like, I didn't watch much TV growing up as mm-hmm. a kid at all. Like, I was always outside playing, always doing stuff. And I just think that I was at, like, a good time frame as a kid growing up to where, like, I didn't do any of that because a lot of it wasn't around. And then as I'm getting older and kind of into the more, like, business side of the world, I had to obviously mature at a lot younger age than most people do. Like, most kids are in college still. And still trying to figure out what they want to do with their life. And I'm, like, set in stone with what I want to do with my life. And so I think that, like, now, like, I see my phone and, like, I don't go on TikTok for fun. Like, I keep it, like, mostly straight, like, pretty much of what I need to do on there. And I'm like, I just don't want to scroll on TikTok or Instagram. Like, I really don't feel like it. Like, I'm so over it. Like, and just, like, I use it, obviously, as a platform to kind of show my life. But, like, I really don't care to, like, scroll through other people's stuff.
It's your job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like when you go on TikTok or Instagram or whatever it is, for you at 21 years young, it's a job for you. So mm-hmm. when you're on TikTok or Instagram or whatever it is, any social media platform, and you built this gigantic platform. Mm-hmm. I know whenever we utilize you, the chat goes crazy and all these things. And that's you just pushing the people that follow you and mm-hmm. have been a part of your journey. And I think that you transcended at a perfect time, too. I remember having conversations with your dad when that time was changing. And there were, like, networks trying to, like, talk to you guys mm-hmm. and all these things. And you guys just ended up running it on YouTube.
Yeah.
Which ended up being probably the smartest thing you could have done mm-hmm. because YouTube has become this evergreen platform that everyone now goes to, and it's a staple on. And I think you guys were one of the first families to cross over and do that, and it's kind of mm-hmm. built this brand that you are today. Was it hard, like growing up, like, you're surrounded by dirt and then you ended up on concrete?
Mm-hmm.
Was it that transition of did you just want to build your own brand? Were you over just like being around the dirt? Like, when did the cars start becoming a thing for you?
I mean, I think when you kind of look at the racing world, the motorsports world in America, you kind of go, okay, well, NASCAR racing is really the biggest form of car racing there mm-hmm. is in America. And so I was racing off-road trucks, UTVs, that type of stuff. And I was kind of like, there wasn't much further to go with it. Like, I could have, like, kept going a little bit with my career in there, but, like, it was going to tap out fairly quickly. And I think I just looked at it as, like, okay, like, what's next? And my parents had a conversation with me about it, and I got signed up for, like, a Drive for Diversity program, and somehow ended up in North Carolina. I knew no one out there. I knew nothing about stock car racing, like, absolutely nothing. And for the longest time, I had to act like I knew what I was talking about, and I just agree with everybody. Just, yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I would do my research. I had these books. I think they're called, like, Speed Secrets. There's, like, a massive collection of them, and it's all like pavement racing, and a lot of it road course, but still a lot of the stuff is applied. And I used to read those books just trying to learn the lingo, because like my lingo was totally different from everyone else's in the stock car world. So like just trying to learn and like I guess like better educate myself, like that was I guess my like end a bit of schooling, like it was that. But it was tough because I was like going into an unknown. Like, it's not like my dad did that before and ever really had a career in stock car racing for me to kind of go, okay, this is what I need to do.
Yeah, it's a whole new world. Mm-hmm. How did that happen? Like, when was the first kind of experience or the first kind of car you get in? Because you didn't grow up go-kart racing like Mm-mm. the rest of them, right?
Mm-mm. No, I've had like a couple of days where I go out to like the go-kart track for like a class deal. I remember it was, I think, Paris, the go-kart track there. It was some guy named Dave. And I remember his, like, quotes were, like, modulation, acceleration. And that, like, stuck with me my entire life. We still make jokes about it. And I was, like, probably 6 to 8 years old when I was going to that. Yeah. Like, I was fairly young. But, like, that was only go-karting I did. And that was, like, a couple times a year. But other than that, like, I didn't have any experience in any sort of pavement racing. So it was just new.
And then that started, obviously, that kind of, did you guys start going to North Carolina for that?
Mm-hmm.
And then you started getting in those cars because you went from off-road kind of straight into that. And
yeah.
How off-roading for you, like, and then you're right. It's you got to look at the scale of, where the largest kind of racing is, and that being obviously NASCAR and still mm-hmm. today and off-roading. It seems it's. I mean, all of these sports are, but are cost a lot of money. But mm-hmm. off-roading, it's a limited mm-hmm. track, right?
Mm-hmm.
When was the first time you got in like a stock car?
So the first time was actually pretty close to when I started going out to North Carolina. Like, it was within a quick time frame. I did a late model test at Hickory and Greenville Pickens. It was two small tracks out there. And I just pretty much tested a late model. And the guy that was at that test, he had some connection with Toyota. And pretty much asked, he's like, hey, do you care if we call Toyota and, like, tell them about you and, like, kind of give some information on you? I'm like, yeah, go for it. Like, I didn't think anything of it. I didn't even know, like, Toyota had a development program. Like, it was so new to me and so unknown. And so they called up Toyota, and I was, like, 14, 15 at this time. And they ended up doing, like, some tryout with me, like, pretty much me and a bunch of other girls. And I ended up getting a 3-year deal with them. So I was with Toyota for 3 years up until I was 18. And then that's when I switched to Ford. But I had that deal with Toyota pretty much was like why I was able to get into stock racing.
Getting a Toyota deal before you can get a driver's license?
That's what I was just thinking. Yeah. I'm like, wait, so you're driving these cars on tracks and you're 2 years from getting a normal driver's mm-hmm. license. That must have been pretty exciting.
Yeah, it was. It was really, really cool. And like, I think that helped me, honestly, a lot with figuring out the stock car world, because I wasn't doing it on my own. Like, I had like other people to go to within Toyota, and like obviously like the development program guys, like to be able to like kind of talk to and figure it all out. But that was the 2 years that I ran in the K&N series was a part of that, those first 2 years. And that's when I was able to win those couple races.
Crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then how was that experience? You know, again, it's a predominantly male sport,
mm-hmm.
has been forever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's only been, I think there's only one other girl that mm-hmm. I can think of. yeah. that has come through that series.
Mm-hmm.
How was that? Were there obviously complications? Was that another hurdle you had to overcome yourself, or it was kind of easy?
Oh, man. I was like, it's, I never looked at myself differently growing up. Like, I thought it was just cool. Like, I was a girl that raced, whatever. Like, I was friends with all the other guy racers. And I think that was a big change for me going to stock, into the stock car world, is that, like, I don't know. Like, I felt like everyone at the off-road track was, like, my friend. Like, I was able to, like, easily be friends with everybody. And now, like, the stock car world, everyone's, like, so stuck up and, like, so, like, worried that, like, someone else is going to take the ride or whatever it is. And, like, I don't know. Like, I don't even really hang out with any of the stock car people at all, nor talk to them.
Yeah.
Like, I just do my own thing. Because, like, they I don't know, it's different. It's very, very different. And I think that now, like, I'm kind of seeing, like, okay, maybe there is some things that I do get treated maybe a little bit different as a girl, even with crew guys. Like, I feel like sometimes it's hard to get them to believe in me. And I feel like that's been a big struggle ever since, like, now realizing going back, like, I got lucky those first couple years at Toyota that the crew chiefs that I did have believed in me.
Yep.
And, like, I didn't realize how big of a deal that was, because there was a time where, like, I feel like I didn't have necessarily the whole structure that did believe in me.
Yep.
And I feel like it affected my results a lot. So now, like, I feel like this year I'm really in a place where, like, I have people that believe in me.
And this year you're driving the NASCAR Truck Series, driving the number 13 Ford F-150 with Tor Sport Racing.
Mm-hmm.
How's the journey been since joining the team?
Awesome. They're based in Sandusky, Ohio.
Oh, that's cool.
Only truck team out there. It's like, it's kind of odd because, like, everyone's usually in Mooresville, kind of North Carolina. That's, like, the basis of where everyone's at.
Yep.
All the teams are out there within, like, a 30-mile radius, but now they're in Ohio, so, like, they honestly are actually really good about it, to where they're not like, you need to be up here, like, the whole week, all week. And so, like, it's very, actually, they make it very convenient. But, like,
yep.
the Ford Sim is in North Carolina. So, like, I have to go practice on the Ford Sim and spend a couple hours during the week there. And so they, like, call in and have some whole, like, conference room set up to where they can make changes from there and run setups. So they do have a really good system down to where you don't have to be in Sandusky, Ohio to race for them.
Are you sure you're not going there that much?
No, not that much.
Yeah,
I do
nice.
Go there. Still, like, to hang out with crew guys, build a relationship with my team, like, show that I'm invested and I care. But other than that, like, there's not really a need for me to be there. Like, it's not like I'm going to go start really, like, turning wrenches or on the pull down, like, running setups. Like, that's the crew, what the crew chief does. So,
yeah.
And all the other crew guys there, that's their what they do every single day. And if I was, I don't know if I'm that smart just yet. So I let them do their job and I don't try to interfere. But they do their thing up there and I talk to them all the time, stay in contact, like, every single day, and we pretty much do our thing.
Yeah. Have you, I don't know, maybe a stupid question, but do you know much about the engine, obviously, or what's going on? Or are you kind of just like, nah, it's kind of what you guys do?
So the setup stuff, like, I understand the basic setup stuff. Like, if they tell me, like, what we're running and setup-wise, suspension-wise, different things like that. But, like, motor-wise, we run it's like a kind of a stock motor that everyone has to run. It's a Ilmor. And so those motors are what we actually ran the last couple years in the K&N series, but they were kind of tuned down a little bit. So these ones aren't tuned down. So they obviously are a little bit faster than, like, the K&N ARCA cars that were the level below trucks. So it's everyone runs the same motor, though.
Yeah. And then explain to us kind of, like, what goes through, like, a race week. You know, obviously, you know, a lot of people just see the race on a Sunday or whatever, right, Saturday. But that people don't really realize that you're doing times, you're testing the trucks all week. It's kind of like you're in however many races a year, but it's like kind of all week round. It's like maybe you get, like, Monday off or something.
So Monday is actually, like, when it all starts back up. Monday's my big day. So, like, my Sunday is usually my day off to where I can go get caught up on laundry from traveling, get, like, everything ready for the week, go grocery shopping, watch the cup races, and kind of, like, recoup on Sundays. And then Monday, I spend it at the Ford Sim. We have our, like, post-race debrief meetings, going through everything. Tuesday, I'm usually some sort of business calls for sponsorship type deal, meetings, Zoom meetings, a lot of Zoom meetings during the week. I swear, like, Zoom, I'm an avid Zoom customer over here.
Like that.
And so that's kind of what we do Monday and Tuesday. And Wednesday, we go and we race at Millbridge most of the Wednesdays and stuff. So once that season starts back up, which it's starting back up soon, we'll go race at Millbridge on Wednesday. And then Thursday, like, that's when you start flying to the races.
Yeah.
And then you come home usually Friday night to Saturday morning and kind of do your thing.
Yeah. And then you race Daytona again. How was that?
It was a blast until it wasn't, but in typical Daytona.
That's racing, right?
It's like, yeah, it was a blast.
But I saw the whole families out there.
Yeah.
It's going to mean a lot, you know, the whole kind of squad shows up. Mm-hmm. And your parents testify to both your parents that have done an amazing job with you and your brothers. And it's crazy now just even watching, you know, Danger Boy's become this huge kind of success and he's kind of crushing it. And then to see them all there supporting, it must mean the world to have the family there.
Yeah, it was awesome just having everyone there and experiencing it. And I think my dad's been super interested, like, with my new team and everything because he sees, like, what they're doing differently and how much better it could be. And I think when he saw me running top five there and stuff, like, I've never really ran towards the front a whole lot in trucks, like, and that's something that was fairly new to me. Yes, it's Daytona. You're only as good as your pretty much truck or car at Daytona. Like, that's plain and simple. You qualifying takes no talent in Daytona. Yeah. None. That's why whenever Alex Bowman or Kyle Larson gets a Poland Cup, their interview was like, yep, they gave me a good car. Like, it's not like I went out there and, I was just wheeling that thing, pretty much holding it straight, wide open. Like, you're doing nothing.
Yeah.
There's pretty much, like, a checklist that you have, like, okay, get through the gears good, run the top, like, little things like that, that pretty much, like, you just have to check those boxes and you do nothing. Run the line, like, it's nothing crazy.
Yeah.
It's one of the easiest. So it's all up to how your truck is. And there's certain ways that you can set up your truck or car. Like, there's guys that are really good in qualifying that are going to be terrible in the race because their truck's going to be so free and so hard to drive and kind of out of the track. So when you're more trimmed down qualifying, you're going to go faster in qualifying because you're going to get through the air quicker. But in the race, it's going to handle terribly in the draft. So we went kind of on the side of being not as trimmed out, kind of being more stable so we'd be good in the race. And we ended up still qualifying 12th, which wasn't bad at all. I was expecting it to be like kind of 15th to 20th. And so was my crew chief. We were on the same plan with that. So qualifying 12th was pretty good.
Yeah.
And then two of the guys got put to the back. So we started 10th and we were running kind of like around 5th the whole time, anywhere from like I'd say 4th to 8th the first stage. And then we got obviously caught up in one of the other guys crashing. But that's Daytona. It's typical.
And then crashing is obviously a big part of what you do. Are you scared out there or are you just kind of in your zone?
No.
Not scared at all.
I think because growing up around my dad and the whole moto world, that's dangerous. Like, I swear every time Hayden goes on the track, it makes me so nervous, like sickening nervous.
Yeah.
Because, like, I love my little brother so much. Like, and I'm so proud of him. And, like, it makes me so happy to see him do good out there. But when he crashes, it, like, makes me so sad. Like, I just care about him so much. I don't want to see him getting hurt. But he is in a sport, which it is dangerous, that when you do crash, you do get hurt. Like, car racing, you get a little beat up in there. Obviously, the cup cars, I know there's been a lot of issues with people getting hurt in those, and that's a totally different story than trucks and Xfinity. But, like, for the most part, trucks and Xfinity cars, like, I haven't crashed in an Xfinity car because I've only done one race. But the truck stuff, like, it's not bad. Like, I've only had one crash that I'm like, damn, that rocked my shit.
Yeah. It is true, though. Like, motocross is, like, you fall, it's like a broken bone, or you're pretty lucky not to get a broken
femur,
bone.
Femur, arm, like, it's something, usually. Yeah. Collarbone,
you
swear.
You just hold on. You hold on as much as you can. What's that like, though? Have you been in that instance, I mean, where a wreck kind of happens in front of you in the track, where it's kind of like, I mean, must be, like, split second, where you just, like, go through smoke
you don't
and
even
hope nothing's in front of you when you come out of it?
You pretty much, like, you don't even have time, like, at Daytona, somewhere where you're going, like, 190 miles an hour. You're not having time to go, okay, should I go top or bottom? Like, it's happening within a tenth of a second. Like, legit, you're just, your natural reaction, you go with it. And that's why I feel like I've been trying to work on, like, my reaction time a lot more, like, to make those split-second decisions. And, like, even that last wreck at Daytona, we, like, broke it down frame by frame of the wreck, the overhead view. And if I would have went low, I was going to end up in it. I ended up going high when I ended up in it. So either way, I got hit from the guy behind me hit me. So no matter what, if I would have went low, like, it was not going to happen.
It was going to happen.
I wasn't making it through that one. As much as, like, I would have loved to say, like, man, like, if I would have just went low, maybe I could have learned from it, whatever. There was nothing I could do. It was a roadblock.
Yeah.
In 190 miles an hour, those trucks don't stop quick.
And you're going 190 miles an hour. And how close are the trucks all together at the same time?
Oh, you're close. Like, you're hitting
really
each other.
Close.
Yeah, wow. Like, you're
like inches
pretty much
away.
Like, yeah, like you're right with each other, pushing each other. You're all.
And you ever get like locked in?
So you're not allowed to lock. You're allowed to like go get up on someone, go like you kind of have to break apart and stuff. But obviously, when you do lock together, it's a lot quicker. But you're door to door. Sometimes you're three wide. And Daytona's skinnier than Talladega is.
Yeah.
So Talladega, you have a little bit more room. Daytona, it's tight running at three wide. It is pretty tight. And there's a couple seams in the track, which make you get a little bit sketchy. So when you are three wide, you're kind of bouncing off people's door. Like if you ever like, say you're going slow on the freeway and a semi blows by you and you kind of feel it like take your car a little bit, or you're at a stoplight and you feel a semi blow by you and it just kind of like shakes a little bit. It's like that magnified by like 100.
Oh gosh. Oh.
That's what it's like. So you're constantly like, you could be going dead straight. Like the truck can look dead straight, but you are like every which way trying to catch it. Like you have to be almost like trying to predict what it's doing instead of reacting to what it's doing.
Wow, that's really cool. Sounds like driving to Mammoth on a windy day.
You know, probably like, similar.
Yeah.
You're a snowboarder, right?
I like snowboarding. Yeah, I like snowboarding. I used to be a little bit riskier with it. Like, I try jumps and stuff, but now I'm like, man, like, I can't get hurt.
No.
I can't really afford to get hurt, but I still go and snowboard and enjoy it. I love it.
Yeah, just take it easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How important do you think marketing has been to your success too? Like, I think that, you know, I look at a lot of different people and I think that NASCAR is at a point to where they need some, like, they've needed some new blood, and they need, you know, there's definitely some things they need as times change of, you know, from like Dale Earnhardt, like, you know, I think when he retired, it was like a huge kind of like, all right, like the whole of the world or America knows who this guy is. And then you kind of left with the Busch brothers and then so on, and now Kurt's kind of out now, and there's like this trail of
all the heavy hitters have gone. They're gone. Yeah. Jimmy Johnson's back for a few races.
Yeah, comes back for a race.
But
or whatnot,
yeah. But the heavy hitters are gone.
Yeah,
like it's all new faces, and I think that's some of the biggest issues with NASCAR right now is that a lot of the new face, like back then, every heavy hitter that was in it had a personality. You liked them for a reason. Now, fans don't even know a reason to like somebody. They're like, yep, their car looks cool, because they like are no personality one bit. It's like you might as well just talk to a brick wall at that point instead of having a conversation with them.
Is that because you think like obviously with the greats we just mentioned, like they could build their personality after they'd already won so many races, but I feel like almost you got to be like straight and narrow to kind of hold your ride, at least for some of these
people.
Yeah,
I think
like,
you have to be
in
a little bit more politically correct now, so that maybe a little bit more. But I think that's definitely something that there's a lot more corporate people and partners that are involved in it. And I feel like the world, times have changed. And that's something that I feel like has majorly affected the NASCAR world is drivers being able to fully express their personality without getting in trouble with either their sponsor being like, oh, we didn't really like how you acted there or kind of what you said there. And it could be nothing that crazy. Like, it could be something not that bad that people have said 10 to 20 years ago all the time. So.
Yeah.
It's crazy because it is. It's the biggest corporate companies in America, and these are the faces of them to an extent. And, you know, it's definitely looked at it a lot differently. I remember the first Daytona 500 I went to, which – clearly, obviously, is the biggest race of the year, but it happens at the beginning of the season, which is always weird.
Weird. It's like, you know, like you go like the end of the year, like Supercross.
Yeah.
A1's obviously big because it's A1.
For sure.
Like it's right here, Southern California.
Yeah.
For that reason, it's big. But like the end of the year, you got like Monster Cup, like you had all that. And it was just like, I don't know, it's odd. I never really agreed with. I hate going to Daytona first at the beginning of the year.
It's like, weird, it's not, right? Because you're coming back out, you've been on holidays, you've had your time off, you're like, everyone's back into it, and it's straight back into
it. I hate it for the fact of when you're with a new team, anybody, any driver, you're going to Daytona. We did the math on it. Last year, it was Talladega or Daytona with how much stuff that they wrecked. Obviously, this year it was raining, so they didn't get all the laps and stuff, so it, like, there wasn't as many wrecks, but like,
Till the end.
Till the end, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, till the end. But, like, it
they
was...
couldn't even finish the race. Uh-huh, I think at the end there, they were like, fuck it. We can't even run another two laps. Like, you're in the lead, you win. It was Stenhouse,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and the truck race.
Yeah.
When I got in that wreck, I think the guy lost it. Like, he obviously bounced off one of the other guys, but when he, in front of me, when he bounced off that one guy, in the photos and the videos, it was raining. Like, it was, you see, like, water coming down. I'm like, oh, that probably didn't help it, like, for his case, too. So I think that played a little bit of effect into it. But I don't agree with going to Daytona for the beginning of the season, because you're going to that race, from our calculations, from the race, not this year, but 2 years ago, is Talladega or Daytona. You have an 80% chance of not making it back, like, of not finishing that race.
Yeah.
So you got to figure every, like, 2 in 10 people will finish. Like, that's not very good odds. And that doesn't start off a year very good, especially when points obviously matter a lot at the beginning of the year. Like, and you can end up in something stupid like how I did, and now we're behind on points. We did get some stage points, which was good. But, like, you're building new relationships with team. Yeah. You want to start off good. Like, and then you go to somewhere and you just end up absolutely destroying a truck. Front, rear clip, like, and you're just, like, sitting there like, well, shoot, it's Daytona.
Yeah.
Like, it sucks. Like, but it's not like I hate Daytona. Like, it's not my favorite track. But, like, I wouldn't mind going to it later in the year. Like, starting off the season somewhere where, like...
all the media, all the attention.
Mm-hmm, yeah, everything. There's so much media attention. Actually, they wrecked out again. No talent. You're like, dude, I'm doing the same thing as everyone else was. Like, they wrecked in front. Like, yeah. What do you want me to do?
But you know what was crazy? The first race I went to, because Dale was still driving, and when he crashed out at the Daytona 500, all these, like, campers and people start leaving, and I was like, what's going on? And they're like, the 88's out.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They were like, oh, Dale, like, Dale crashed. Half these people were there to see him, and they're like, oh, wow, day's over, and you see campers leaving and people leaving, and I was like, oh, that's weird.
Uh-huh.
But it was a real thing, and that was a long time ago now. What, like, in your mind, like, obviously with F1, they've had Drive to Survive, and pre-Drive to Survive in America, F1 wasn't hugely popular. Like, Lewis Hamilton, who's clearly the best driver of the last, you know, 15 years or 10 years or whatever
it is. He's globally popular, though.
But no, he is globally popular, but, like, even pre-Drive to Survive, like, you could walk him down the street, and it would be 50-50 whether people were going to be like, oh, my God, that's Lewis Hamilton. Now, it's like the 20th driver could walk down the street and F1 would be like, oh, my God. Yeah. Like, you know, Daniel Ricciardo becomes hugely superstar. And I think it was really smart of either F1 or Netflix. I don't even know how that worked.
I don't know how they came together, but great.
Genius.
Like, so good.
You know?
I'm going to be completely honest. Like, I didn't pay attention to F1 racing. It didn't really, like, it's never interest me because I've never been kind of a part of that style of racing. And I watch Drive to Survive. Now I watch all the F1 races because of it. Like, and that's someone who's involved in the racing world. Like, there were so many people I feel like involved in the racing world that didn't really pay attention to F1 racing. And now, because of that show, like, you get invested. But also, I think it was so popular because of how prestigious it really is.
Well, yeah.
And people are like, damn, like, this is a real deal. Like, we didn't realize, like, how prestigious F1 is and how much goes into the data side of it and the engineering and, like, their whole conference rooms during the races. And I think that opened people's eyes and interest them rather than, like, I feel like people kind of in the stock car racing world, like, it's hard because there's it's hard to have cameras around all the time. Like, every team is trying to find the next step above the other team. Drivers kind of lack a little bit of personality. Like, you're going to have, like, you probably name every driver with personality on the one hand.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be hard. It would be hard to build a show like that's that interesting off of it.
So, what like, in your mind, because obviously you thought about it, like, what are ways that you think could help NASCAR kind of grow into this new audience? Like, is it because for you, I look at, you know, from your YouTube show when you were younger to, I don't have the stats in front of me, but your stats are gigantic. From TikTok to Instagram to your YouTube.
Thank you.
And we were just even talking about it. It's like you have, you know, I think you were saying you have like 600,000 subscribers on your YouTube and obviously millions of followers on the other on Instagram and TikTok, which is like short term, like gets rid of people. But YouTube is like people are there and they're invested and they're watching.
Yeah.
And that's crazy. Like you were saying, to have 250,000 people consistently watch those shows, it's massive in today's world. How do you think that could be done on a larger scale? How do you think other athletes in NASCAR or NASCAR itself could help start driving more traffic to what's going on.
So I think there's two different points. I feel like drivers, as a driver, you have to want to. Like, in all honesty, NASCAR fans are the most devoted fans, some of the most devoted fans. When they like someone, they are going to stick with that person their whole life. And I feel like what drivers lack, though, for new fans and, like, say, a dad that was committed to being a Jimmy Johnson fan. Well, like, his son, like, now is going to be watching racing a little bit. Like, he could be devoted to being an Alex Bowman fan. And it could, like, go down better, I feel like, generationally. But I feel like what doesn't help it is, like, the lack of people, personality being shown. People like to relate to other people. Yep. And it's hard to relate to someone and care about someone's career if you just, there's not much there. Like, not much being shown of them and them saying anything. So I think that there's a big lack in that. But also, like, with the people that do want to do stuff and help the sport out, like, I feel like I'm one of those people, and, like, I would love to be more invested in with NASCAR of ideas and different, like, giving my opinion on different things, but, like, there hasn't really been a moment where they've reached out to do that.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of surprised because, like, and I don't know if a lot of people know this, so I got the TV ratings from Fox of the Truck Series. Most of the other series were down, or they were stagnant for the past 2 years. And the Truck Series was up like 10 or 20%. I think it's 20% because 100,000, an average 100,000 viewers.
Yeah.
When I don't know if that just so happens to be coincidence, like when I'm coming to the Truck Series and everything else is down, and then like those 2 years it's up 100,000 people watching every single race. But like I feel like that's something that could be powerful.
And 100%. I've seen it with you. I know when we've done stuff with you live on Twitch or whatnot, and you put it out there, you have like thousands of people that come rushing. It's crazy, and it's a real thing, you know?
Because people get to watch the race in live time, and then they go, okay, in a day or two, I get to watch her YouTube video to see all the behind the scenes of it.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that's such a cool way to drive people to watch the race, because they get to see it beforehand, where before the YouTube video comes out and what happens before we kind of tell our side of the story and stuff. So I just think that there's like a, I wish I could be more involved with NASCAR and help them out with it. Like, I don't know.
Why can't you? Why don't you just go to them with your pitch? That's exactly how I got this show here. I left and I was like, hey guys, if you want a female host, I'm in.
I think, like, they have to be willing to to hear you out.
Yeah.
And I think that that's kind of the...
You don't think so?
I think there's too many maybe buttoned up people over there for them to go, oh, that's a good idea. Like, everyone kind of, like, they want to do their, like, whole presentation and their pitch and their storybook.
The PowerPoint.
The PowerPoint. I'm like, don't hit me with another PowerPoint.
Danny loves a good PowerPoint.
I love making them. I used to be really good at it.
Like, and that's, I feel like, I'm like, no, guys, like, stop trying to script everything.
Yeah.
Like, so bad. Stop sending people to go film an Instagram story of a cup driver walking to the grid and go, time for the race. That's lame. Stop doing that.
Yeah, but you've gone and, like, created that you've let people into your life. Mm-hmm. And I think letting people in is what people want.
They
people
want
to be able to, stupid as it seems, know what you eat for breakfast or see what your dogs look like or see your boyfriend or whatever it is.
It's relatability.
It's relatability. Yeah. And that's where Drive to Survive worked, because they made all these guys relatable, whereas you didn't know them as just this crazy fast car going by. And internationally, like, yes, people love F1. People love MotoGP, but not as much in America.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? We don't have an American driver in F1. It's like, but let alone we have three races here, and they've gone and grown that, and they've grown that popularity within the sport.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly like what you've done personally. You know, another sport that is heavily, heavily involved females into it is UFC and the organization that Brittany's with. And it's been really cool. Not every card, but there are cards there where it's, you know, almost 50-50, or at least, you know, what is it? It was 70-30, and there are now, like, Ronda Rousey being, you know, obviously the lead way, but it's way surpassed that now, and it's their UFC fighters or MMA fighters. But typically, the UFC organization that has really pushed female fighters into it, you know, I know for you, it's, but you think that they could potentially, you know, bring more females into it at some point.
But I think you make such a beautiful point, because where I think UFC did right is they've integrated social media with, because like she's saying, like the sons are watching it now. What are the sons are on TikTok, like have influencers create these stars, because UFC creates stars. Yes, they have star potential, but I'm sorry, when Conor was on the map, he came out, he was a star from the get-go, but UFC put him on the map. Like they gave him the support. So like giving you and supporting you, and almost like these corporations aren't getting with the times, which is now social media, YouTube, creating shows. Because UFC, we have The Ultimate Fighter. What does that do? It creates the storyline where they want to follow them. That's how we get...
Which Conor came through, right?
Which Conor came through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that you're absolutely onto something.
Yeah, and I think, like, I wish people took more advice from the social media influencers themselves, like, and less of the same people that are going to college, going through their textbook, going, business marketing. And going, do this, do this, do this. And they all do the same thing. Make the PowerPoint, make the storyboard. And it's just like, it's all the same. It's so cookie cutter that, like, I feel like people need to actually see, like, no, like, this is working because this influencer has literally applied it and it works. Mm-hmm. It's showing the numbers right here. Like, let's take advice from them and less textbook of all the same thing.
It's got to take the digging blueprint. every month we get the report from the Monster Army, which Hayden's on, obviously, Danger Boy, and it's like you see everyone else's ratings, and then he's just like
Hayden
up the top.
Oh yeah, yeah. And he's got a lot of personality. And I think like someone else, it's great for the moto world. I think moto guys do a good job with their personality, their feuds. I love it. Like I love looking at the moto world stuff. And like a great personality just goes so far. Yeah. And I feel like there's a lot more of it when it comes to Supercross stuff, moto world. Like it's just, I don't know. I think people are better at showing their personalities.
Yeah. Have you ever had a relationship or talked to Danica Patrick at all much?
So I've had a few conversations here and there. Nothing that recently, though. So she's kind of, I mean, she's kind of dipped and kind of doing her own thing. I know she does some stuff on like the broadcast networks. But yeah. Other than that, I think that she was before her time.
Yeah.
I really think she was. And I think that's why, I don't know if it left like a bad taste in her mouth, like her involvement in the NASCAR world. But like, I kind of see why like she dipped and doesn't want to get involved anymore. Like she got so much hate for being such a heavy hitter. She brought so many new fans to the sport, has such a mass following, like did something that no other girl has really done in the past at that, like at that prestigious level of when it was so competitive. And there was like, literally she was there when a lot of the heavy hitters were there. And like, and I don't care if she finished mid pack or what, like that's a big deal. Like that's something, there's a reason why no other girl's really done it. Like, it's not easy. Trust me, there's a lot. Yeah, you get a couple more pros, but there's a lot of cons that come with it, and a lot of people don't realize that.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Yeah, I never really have, like, spent much time with her either, so I was wondering if she, in the beginning there, was like, hey, like,
let's... I don't even know if she's really that nice, but I speak highly of her, so... I haven't had many conversations. I've had, like, a few little, like, here and there, but so long ago before I was really involved in the sport.
Yeah. Crazy. So with the, I want to talk about just a little bit about, obviously the YouTube shows, where they escalated from. It was more, family stuff in the beginning, right? And then you've gone out and kind of done your own thing.
Yeah.
Did you guys ever do stuff with the network, or it was all just kind of stuck with YouTube?
So I can't tell you how many pilots we've filmed for TV shows over and over again. I think at the end of the day, where they all fall apart is when they try to take control out of your hands. When they try to script stuff, when they try to pretty much not let you final proof stuff, take stuff out that you want to. And I think that's where it kind of splits apart. Every TV show, like pilot that we've done in the past with the family and all that. But like, even I feel like at this level, like it'd be hard to do a TV show of just like our family, because we are so split up in so many different states, with my dad doing, he'll be doing King of the Hammer stuff. My little brother's racing Supercross. I'll be at a NASCAR race. Like everyone's so split up in so many different directions that I think it would be hard to capture it all.
Yeah.
Because we all kind of have so much stuff that we're involved in and doing that, like it'd be hard to kind of keep it all together.
Yeah. Pros and cons. Pros of the Nerardi and cons of the Nerardi.
Of what?
Of being Haley Deegan, becoming famous.
Oh. I would say the social media impact because of my dad being a girl in racing. That's a pro. That definitely helps out with sponsors, with starting those conversations, because you're able to show proof instantly. Like, followers, analytics, boom. Like, you're able to pretty much show and explain yourself without having to. Like, just kind of let the numbers talk for itself when it comes to getting sponsors and that thing. And a lot of guys struggle with getting sponsors. Like, there's not many guys that are coming up the ranks at all that aren't from family money. Like, it's a lot of that now. And
yeah.
It's just, it's different. Times have obviously changed. And like, there's a lot of good drivers like that aren't racing because they don't have sponsors and stuff. So when it comes to being a girl in racing, I feel like that does help out with the sponsor side of things.
Yep.
And there is a cool factor to it. But like, the cons with that is that there's other things you have to deal with. It's going to be really hard to get people to believe in you on the team. And it's just, you're going to get more hate. And no matter what you do, good or bad, you're going to have a lot more bad days than you are good days. And that's how it is in a lot of sports. And you go, obviously, stick and ball sports. There's one winner, one loser. And I know we had this conversation mm-hmm. before, but you go in racing, there's 30-odd losers and there's one winner.
Every week. It's crazy.
So you're going to have a lot more bad days than you are good days.
Like, mentally, you know, that's you preparing to lose.
Oh, yeah. You know? Gotta be like, yeah, everyone's like, oh no, not with that mindset. Like, you gotta go out there and win. I'm like, there's one person that wins this weekend. Like,
yeah.
Like, everyone's like expectations, I feel like, can get so carried away in that. Like, oh, just go out there and win. And then, like, if you're not winning, it's almost like you can't let yourself get too down because you're like, it's not a 50-50 type deal. It's not like I was the bad one and they were the good one. It's like, no, like, we were all off that weekend and there was one guy that hit a home run. And so I think that's like the side where you're going to get more hate because, first of all, you are a girl. You have a spotlight on you. You're going to get more attention. People are going to pay more attention to you. People want to see you fail because you're going to fit in the mold of all the other girls that have failed. And so they're like, oh, waiting for her to make a mistake. Whereas the other guys, they can make mistakes here and there and they'll go unnoticed. And their big moments, their spotlight moments are when they do good.
Yeah.
And so I think there's going to be a lot more light on your bad days than there are on anyone else on the track. And so I'd say that's the con side of it.
And then how do you deal with that mentally?
I mean, I feel like I had no choice but to be mentally tough growing up.
I think you had the best choice. Yeah. You grew up around old boys.
Oh, yeah.
And then, your mom was there, but the rest of them was old boys in a boys' world. Getting, dirt chucked in your face since you were young.
You, grew up in competition, so you know how that works. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know how the failure, you know how to pick up and keep going, persevere.
Yeah, and I think I'm not a very, emotional person at all. Like, I'm pretty, I've got called heartless multiple times.
And
I think that's just kind of, I guess, how I grew up. Like, it was like, okay, you're not allowed to cry unless you're hurt. Unless you're bleeding, you're not allowed to cry. No, like, that's
unless
unacceptable.
There's, a bone sticking
yes,
out.
Yes, exactly. Which I grew up, and I understood that. I was like, yeah, so-and-so just weeded themselves, collarbone out, broken arm, sticking out of their arm. Like, and I'm like, that would be eligible to cry. But most of the time, they're in so much shock that they don't cry. Like, my little brother broke his collarbone, fractured his back years ago, and he was probably 10 years old. Yeah, 10 years old, because I was 10, 11 years old, because I was taking care of him on the couch when we were in North Carolina. And, not a tear.
Yeah.
And was just in so much shock that, I'm like, okay, but that would be an eligible moment of when I guess you could cry.
An eligible moment.
Yeah. Digging households a little
tough. Oh, yeah, it's a little rough.
I was going to say,
I cry all the time.
I'm going to go cry after this.
I know.
But I guess the story.
But that helps, right? I mean, being heartless, that's what racing's about.
Yeah.
You don't want to be not like heartless in that sense, but
it's exactly
worry about other people in the sense you want to keep it focused.
I'd say the only thing I've ever really is kind of recently where I was like, man, an emotional moment for me was watching Hayden make his first Supercross start. Like, I was so happy for him. Like, I'm so proud of Hayden and all that he's accomplished, and he's such a good kid and works so hard at it. Like, and has devoted so much of his life to motocross, Supercross, and it's just to see him go out there and succeed from the start after he had a bad weekend at the Futures race, and it just it made me so happy. Like,
he's
racing
Yamaha?
He's Star Yamaha, yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool. Mm-hmm.
But, like, it started bringing tears to my eyes.
That's awesome.
His first Supercross series. Like, I was, like, getting choked up. I was mic'd up, and
she was
filming it, and I was, like, choked up in the video.
So that's a moment, that's an eligible moment to cry?
That's an eligible moment. I feel like, I'm like, man, like, I'm not an emotional person, but, like, this is, man, this is how people feel. Like, they can't help it.
This is how it's supposed to feel.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, this is new for me.
Yeah, he's growing up fast, too. He's not a little kid anymore.
Oh, no, he's 5'7", 5'6".
Well, he's taller than he was.
You're taller than he was, yeah, I hope.
Tough household. She's like, nah, he's short still.
Oh, I give him shit every single time I see him. I'm like, hey, calm down. He'll be like, tries to be like big guy in the room. Like, just like, just joking around and stuff. But like, I'm like, hey, calm down, buddy. Like, you just got armpit hair. Like, calm down. And I swear, I always do that to him a lot.
That's awesome.
Always,
yeah,
you need try to keep him humble.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good. Yeah. It's good. Good to have Haley Deegan as big sister.
Yeah,
humbling. Mm-hmm. No, he'll. Yeah, that's really cool to see.
Yeah.
Big motorsport family, the Deegans. Tough, mm-hmm. tough shoes to follow.
Yeah, yeah. We're always going in a bunch of different directions.
I'm curious, what would your older self give advice to your younger self? Like, what would you, if you could give yourself advice when you were younger of what you know now?
I would say stop taking people's opinions or caring about what people say around you. And because really it doesn't matter. Like,
yeah.
In my mindset now that I wish I could have kind of told my younger self was like, first of all, if they're not doing something on a bigger level than you are, more successful than you've been, why the hell are you going to take their opinion on anything? Yeah. That's like, if you were seeing that person, like if you're at the gas station and some random person says something to you and that's rude or mean or makes a comment or say they're talking shit on the car you drive, whatever, like you're just going to be like, literally blow it off, like act like they're non-existent, like, and it's not gonna matter and you're never probably gonna think about it ever again. And whereas like social media, like you can see that one comment and like it's just that person probably in their mom's basement going,
yeah,
I'm gonna say this to her, like, and you're like, okay, why? You would never take that person's opinion in any other instance.
No,
ever.
And it's crazy how much that affects people too, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, like just being able to brush it off. People are always going to want to take you down, especially when you're succeeding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's like just how the world works. Mm-hmm.
And I kind of enjoy it because like I love going through comments and I like seeing people say so. So I'm right. Like,
you, do you comment back?
No. Because like,
that's what they want.
I mean, I tell myself on YouTube, every 10 to 1, I can comment back. I have to comment on 10 good things said. Yep. Before I can try to roast somebody, right?
Yeah, your engagement's on point, girl. Oh, no wonder your social media. You're commenting on 10?
Yeah.
They're so lucky if they get a heart from mine.
She's like, heart.
Skip
you.
It.
Black heart.
Yeah.
Delete. For your right, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a wild thing to think about, right? Like, from 100 years of sports, like, you'd have to be in the stands, like, baseball style, yelling at someone, like you saw!
Literally, like,
and
poster.
And now you can literally, like you said, someone could just be sitting in the basement, yeah. Just being like, whatever,
that's
your
why
style's
I hate Twitter.
Whack.
Mm-hmm. I like, hate Twitter because it is the only place where people who have not earned a voice or have built a platform can have a voice.
Yeah.
And that was why I do not like. People who have been successful, built a platform, they've done it usually for a reason, and their voice, their opinion really, really matters. But people with 2 followers, they can have a voice on Twitter, and I hate that. That's why I never go on Twitter.
Yeah, it's crazy to think, right? They could have 2 followers, but they could also own that space in a comment on anyone else's
literally
page.
All they have to do is hit retweet to their 2 followers and could go to the other guy's 2 followers and go to the other guy's 100 followers, and it just literally, like, funnels into, like, this mass, like, being able to go everywhere from Twitter. I just hate Twitter so much.
Yeah.
I have a big spite towards it.
I don't like Twitter either. I never really jumped on the board.
Mm-mm. And but
I'm not witty enough for it. Like, I don't have, like, that quick, like, I'm like, I don't, you know. You
I can't
to, like,
type enough. There's
say.
Not enough room. Never, whenever I want to say something, I'm like, I ain't going to make it 2 parts also.
I just don't think that my points are important enough. Like, I'm more for, like, the photos and the art of it. But, like, what I say, I don't know.
Just how do I still understand people come up with just opinions. Just, like, off the top of their head. I'm like, why do you feel the need, like, okay, you're following that person, but you're like, oh, I feel the need to give my opinion on this, even though they didn't ask for it. Like, that's just on Twitter's weird.
Yeah.
But NASCAR's main platform, they love Twitter.
Well, they're old school.
But, like,
really?
They got to, I'm telling you, you got to go in with, like, the TikToks.
But that's funny,
and, like,
though. You look at some of the drivers, and the drivers will have, you know, 50,000, 60,000 Instagram followers, and then they'll have like hundreds of thousands. Yeah. Of Twitter. I mean, old school.
Like, look at F1. F1's going crazy right now because they're mastering marketing and like they're doing really good at it, to where people who like don't even weren't into racing, they're like, oh, sick. Did you guys see it? And, like,
I remember looking it up. Whoever took over F1's, like, the organization that does like the whole management for F1, I don't know exactly what it's called, but like, they have killed it. Yeah, another good. Level, like, between the merchandise, the mass,
the cool factor.
Yeah, it's become cool. Yeah. And like, they did
bring
such
NASCAR cool. make NASCAR cool.
Jeez. what tracks do you look forward to racing most this year?
I think, as much as probably going back to Mid Ohio in the road course. I really like Mid Ohio.
Yep.
That's a fun track. Vegas, I'm looking forward to because it's like my first mile and a half, which I feel like are my better tracks with the team, and they really ran good last year at Vegas. And then Bristol Dirt Race, because the truck that, like, the crew chief and the crew that was on the truck last year and the years in past, it was their truck was so fast at Bristol Dirt. And I remember legit going, like, damn, that truck, like, look at the platform of it. Like, it looks good. And now I'm in that truck, so I'm pumped.
Nice. Yeah. The one race I went to at Bristol, it got rained out. I got stuck in a bus. It got flooded in. And, like, they had to, like, rescue us out of it.
Yeah, it's normal, Bristol. Always take your own car to Bristol.
Yeah,
you fly
right?
into Charlotte, and obviously we live in the Charlotte area. So, like, I just drive to Bristol, and when it rains out for 4 days in a row, you can just drive home every night.
And you enjoy the dirt.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun. It's different. I wouldn't call it necessarily dirt racing. It's like slick pavement pretty much.
Yeah.
Like, because they have to keep it so dry because of the windshields that there's no grip to it. It's legit like a slick pavement track.
Yeah, I guess you can't peel your own windshield off. No. You've got to pull in to do it, eh?
You can't see.
And no windshield wipers.
The biggest problem is the radiators in the front, the screens, they get packed full with mud if they have any bit of moisture on the track. So your truck is running like 250, 60 degrees, pushing water out. You're trying not to blow up the motor pretty much. It's pretty much a race between trying not to blow it up till the end. And it's I don't know. Like, they need to figure something out with it because, like, it just kills the trucks. Like, everyone's motors are practically toast after that race.
Yeah,
it's a couple guys that will blow them up in heat races and qualifying because that's when they have to keep moisture in the track so that it's decent by the end of the race at nighttime.
Crazy.
And it's just, it's a kind of a mess a little bit.
Well, you're racing the NASCAR Truck Series, driving the number 13 Ford F-150 for Thor Sport Racing. We love you here at Monster Energy. Brittany, do you have anything to say? If Danny, have anything to say before we go?
No, that was awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem at all.
Just, you're now my favorite NASCAR driver.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you. I appreciate it. The other two or three are here today, so you can tell them.
That I will tell them. I will.
Well, good luck this
on
year.
On Twitter.
I'll retweet. Don't worry.
We love you. And then we definitely want to bring you back for the live. We just started doing lives, and they're awesome. It would be really cool to interact with your fans. We know we love your fans, and we thank you. Thank them for the support. Good luck this year.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
That's a wrap.
Unleashed with the Dingo and Danny. Fueled by Monster Energy.